This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
When I was a junior, I never thought about, you know, I'm going to go make millions of dollars on the PGA Tour. You know, I talked about, man, I really want to win the Bay Hill event, Donald Palmer event. I really want to win the Memorial like Tiger did. You know, I want to win majors. That's what I grew up wanting. That's, you know, what I still want this day.
The Adam Gold Show. I am Adam Gold. Dennis Cox on the ones and twos. That was Billy Horschel yesterday. Thrilled that Billy was willing to do that. I promised that it wouldn't be, that Liv would not be the thrust of the conversation. But it seemed like Billy wanted to go there earlier than I did. Actually, that's not true. I just kind of, I exercised some restraint. But when we got there, Billy went all in, and I appreciate Billy Horschel's time, and I've always liked Billy Horschel. It's amazing he has not been part of a national team yet, but chances are he's going to be part of this President's Cup team. We'll see what the President's Cup actually looks like. I have a lot of college football to talk about with Chip Patterson, my friend, who joins us every Wednesday from CBSSports.com and the Cover 3 podcast. How are you, sir? You look bright and bushy-tailed today.
Yeah, August, right? I mean, you know, the football junkie in me, just you flip the page and all of a sudden people are more interested in you. So you can't help but bring the best energy, because all of the time that I spend in June and July talking about all these things and breaking down, establishing all of the analysis that's going to help power the demand that comes in August, it's like the calendar turns and people start knocking on the door. So it's a good time of year.
All right, let's get a little football in. And before we get out of here, I will ask you about the lawsuit that has been filed against the PGA Tour by 11 players from the LIV series led by Phil Mickelson. But let me ask you this, because we just had the Pac-12 media days at the end of last week. So, and George Kliavkov, who was part of the alliance that absolutely monumentally unfortunate alliance between the Big Ten, ACC, and the Pac-12. Kliavkov didn't care about saying the quiet stuff out loud. He slammed the Big 12. Hey, look, I understand why the Big 12 is angry. Look at their schools. Look at our schools. I actually think that Kliavkov was kind of right. But what do you make of the absolutely open disdain for what Kliavkov says the Big 12 was trying to do, which is raid his conference?
Yeah, it sounds like deja vu from Bob Bowlesby talking about how ESPN and the SEC were colluding to try to pick apart his conference. We had the exact same conversation 1 year ago, just with a different conference that found itself on life support. I do think that George Kliavkov is speaking with such confidence and speaking with such swagger under the impression that Oregon and Washington are going to be around for the new media rights deal, and that the four teams that have constantly been linked to the Big 12 for now at least appear to be taking what he thinks are going to be bigger checks from the Pac-12 than they would be able to go and get in the Big 12. And I generally think there was a lot of his sort of State of the Union address that didn't connect, because George Kliavkov, in the same, you know, 30 to 45 minutes, you know, discussed how he sounded very much like Jim Phillips, talking about the student athlete, talking about the great academics, talking about the culture, and how we can't let football be, you know, the dominant piece of college athletics. We need to take care of everyone, while at the same time bragging about the television deals and thinking about how much better and more money and how money is driving everything. Like, he is trying to toe both the Kevin Warren, it's all about our brand and corporate buzzwords, while also trying to do the Jim Phillips. And so in the alliance, which you just referenced, he is really trying to be on both sides of this, between the the forward, financially sound, the revenue-driven model, and also the ACC side of things, at least from Jim Phillips, which is really trying to hold on to the collegiate model of old.
Yeah, the collegiate model is something that we I've been saying that this is a bad idea for a long time. The collegiate model is a bad model. But the collegiate idea, I'm not talking about the model. I'm not talking about we're here for good old State U. I'm talking about the idea that the college sports is a good thing and that we need to do what we can to preserve not the economic model of college sports, but the fact that college sports exists in whatever form. I think those are two different things. I'm not going to criticize. I didn't criticize Jim Phillips for talking about how college sports can do so many good things because I agree with it. And it doesn't have to be entirely about money. I want to talk about money in a second. So I'm not critical over that. But I am curious your thoughts on, economically speaking, would you rather be the Pac-12 or the Big 12 right now?
From my understanding, economically speaking, there is a slight edge for the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. Number one, just on the flat per school payout estimations from media rights industry sources. And I'm getting this not, I don't talk to the TV networks, Adam. I gotta tell you. It sounds exhausting.
You are a TV network, Mr. CBS.
I would rather be the content provider than be totally in on the executive programming side of this. But from Dennis Dodd, who does talk mm-hmm. to people within the industry, from other reporters who are in and have a good line on that, it sounds like even with USC and UCLA gone, while the value has absolutely been stripped from what it could be, life in the Pac-12 on a per school per year payout basis from the media rights deal does slightly edge Pac-12 over Big 12. Now, here's the second part. I think you've got so much less competition that when it comes to your relationship with the bigger media rights partners that you have, you are not going to be fighting for premium kickoff times right. in the same way that you would with the Big 12 when you are living in the same time as the Big 10, half of the SEC, and also still battling with Eastern time zones. That was one piece of George Kliavkov's statement mm-hmm. that he continued to come back on, where we in the Pac-12 are the premium place for college athletics west of the Rockies. Mm-hmm. And that's true. There's no one else who is playing college sports at a high level in a large swath of the country. Now, the counter is, how much do they care about college sports in those parts of the country versus how much they care about college football in a, you know, crazy place like the state of Texas, you know, which we are going to be having at the Big 12, not just, you know, the remainder of Texas Tech and TCU, but we're also activating Houston as the Cougars are preparing for their arrival in the Big 12. But I think it is, number one, according to people within the industry and reports on such, a slight monetary edge. But in terms of overall, like economically, the lack of competition that you have mm-hmm. Regionally does seem significant.
Yeah, but look, I don't know where the Pac-12 is going to go. Is ESPN going to buy? Is Fox going to buy? Are we talking about streaming services? Are we looking, you know, Apple's getting in really into it. Will Netflix? I mean, there's Google. There are so many options in terms of streaming services. But I keep looking at the fact that for the most part, with, you know, a couple of exceptions right now, for the most part, Pac-12 is in the Pacific time zone. And of the major conferences, they're the only, well, I guess the Big Ten is now too, but they're the only one there. So I think the Pac-12 has an opportunity, and the Big 12 is in direct competition with, you know, the other three major conferences, right, other than the Pac-12. I mean, and even if the Big 12 were to somehow convince Arizona and Arizona State to go, which I'm not sure they will, they're still basically competing with the SEC, and in the state of Texas, the two biggest fish in that pond are in the Southeastern Conference. Like, I like the Pac-12's position. I don't necessarily like either conference's position, but if I was going to choose, it would be the Pac-12. They just don't necessarily have a signature program.
Yeah, the Big 12 was able to land premium kickoff TV slots only when they involved Oklahoma and Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, you can catch your Oklahoma State Baylor game on FS1 at 3:30. Like, you can catch Kansas State. You'll say the into the future. Let's play it out. UCF's in town, and it's going to be UCF and TCU. Well, UCF and TCU, that is going to be deep on your cable package. Only Chip gets that channel when you look for what that Big 12 matchup is going to be.
You will be live blogging it.
It is going to be so much easier for the Pac-12, if it does have an ESPN, if it does have a Fox, to be all alone in that late time slot. And so I know that the Big Ten wants to be there. Listen, Kevin Warren has not been shy to say, we look forward to putting, you know, our Big Ten properties out there on the West Coast, trying to grow the Big Ten brand, trying to get California, the state which produces more college graduates leave the state of California to go to another university than anywhere else in the entire country. Some of that's a numbers game, just because there's so many people out there. But that's what the Big Ten is trying to tap into. As the population is moving out of the Midwest, the Big Ten wants exposure to a place like California. They want to convince some of these California undergrads to come to their universities in the future. So Big Ten will be in that 10:30 time slot and will provide some challenge to the Pac-12, but it's nothing like the Big 12, which, as the SEC is going to have on ABC, a 3:30 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. We don't know what's going to happen with Big Noon Saturday, but I assume that's only going to become more and more Big Ten, as it was really only Oklahoma or Texas that would land them in that spot. And you just start to see all the real estate get gobbled up for those 2 to 3 major time windows. I think the Pac-12 is going to find itself being able to get a bigger draw, better ratings than some of the Big 12, at least the Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma.
What do you think the potential is for some sort of arrangement between the ACC and the Pac-12 to put Pac-12 games on the ACC network?
Well, then you just rebrand it, right? You kill off the way that I understand it is the game plan is you would kill off the Pac-12 network. You would hand over whatever infrastructure, whatever value there is to ESPN, allow ESPN to maybe rebrand the ACC network so that it is this coast-to-coast college sports network. You end up adding a ton of inventory for that channel from where it is just with the ACC, but then also you capitalize on the fact that the ACC network has national distribution and you're able to get a lot more money per subscriber on the West Coast than you are now, because right now the money that you are getting with this national distribution includes very small amounts for places where there are not ACC schools. Now, all of a sudden, you've got the proximity to the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. You've got some of those California schools. That is, to me, a chance to boost revenue in a way that should be able to help some of these ACC schools. And it's been suggested that the unequal revenue sharing conversation might be more tied to new revenue streams. Like the classic revenue stream as it stands, they're still going to split it evenly to try and still sing kumbaya around the fireplace. But instead, if we generate new money, that new money might be dispersed in a way that will help the biggest brands who are trying to keep up with the top of college athletics.
I can't think that doing something like that is an admission that the ACC isn't strong enough to do the network on their own. And look, that might just be the reality of the situation. And part of it is because, and I talked to David Hale about this Monday, just how important this year is for ACC football in this time that we're in of, I mean, the next change is coming probably sooner than most people think. I think we're going to be stable unless Notre Dame moves. Again, unless somebody sees value in adding Oregon and Washington, I don't see anybody else really having value. Everything else is really probably hurting the academic cause, the economic cause. But to me, it's just an admission that the ACC can't do it on their own. If that's the case, why not just add Oregon, Washington, Cal, and Stanford, and simply say, "Hey, this is our league now. We have planes. It doesn't matter where we are."
I haven't felt that momentum, because I think there's not. I don't think the whole ACC would be down for that.
Well, I agree. I'm not for it.
University would not. I think the university presidents and the schools, I don't think they would have the votes to just gobble up the Pac-12, call it one big conference, and say this is our league. I think that the thing about the taking a broadcast approach doesn't require the same kind of bylaws, because then it's just a programming decision. Then it's just a media decision. And so the Pac-12's advantage is that they would then be able to maintain a relationship, have an inroads with ESPN, of course, which ACC has all of its media rights tied to. The ACC would then be able to get more per subscriber for the ACC network. And I've actually thought about it more in terms of the kind of makeup of the ACC and the Pac-12 and their universities, the ways that both of those conferences really value Olympic sports. And I've thought about the ACC network as a property which really is showcases the Olympic sports in a major way and relies on those Olympic sports to really not only drive programming, but be able to draw in interest from a lot of the fans that are very excited to see national championship contending lacrosse teams, national championship contending baseball teams, and how important all that stuff is. And that's where I think that the Pac-12 and the ACC have that in common in a way that the Big 12 and the SEC for sure do not. Big 10, it's sort of different sports, but the Pac-12 and the ACC, if when you need to load up on some of those Olympic sports, you're going to be getting it at a championship level. And that is something that I think it creates it's an interest, because it is a natural pairing for a channel that ultimately will be having not as many football games as it will showcasing the other Olympic sports.
Looking forward to Southern Cal sailing, in that where what was her name from Full House, where they got her daughter.
Lori Loughlin.
Lori Loughlin. I don't know. Making stuff up at this point. All right, when we come back, I want to ask you this question, and then we'll fold it into as we close to what do you think of the lawsuit that Mickelson is leading against the PGA Tour. Is it possible, and you and I are really not necessarily in favor of expanding the college football playoff, especially to the numbers they're talking, but is it possible that the sport needs it to save it from itself? We'll talk about that next.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that. You can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
Expanding the college football playoff might actually be necessary to essentially save the sport from itself. Because narrowing the field of college football, I don't think is good for college football. Certainly good for those two conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC. But I'm not sure it's good for the sport as a whole, which is the second most popular sport in the United States. So what are your thoughts on a 12, or even, as Gene Smith from Ohio State said, can't ignore the constant chatter of a 16-team playoff. Is that almost necessary to save the sport?
Yes, and I am thinking about save the sport from a position that is selfish, and it's a position where we are able to include as many people as possible, as many universities as possible, as many fans as possible under the same umbrella, because there will be a loss for the interest of a fan of the 85th best school in the 131 team FBS as it stands going into 2022, if they are removed from the subdivision entirely, or if there is a subdivision breakaway of just 55 to 60, 45 to 65, however many it ends up being, if we do go down that path, that there will be a loss where they won't care as much. The fact that you are in the same league just gives you that much more of a percentage of opportunity to be able to have access as an interested fan. And I think that casting the widest net possible is great. And like, I was against college football playoff expansion with the idea that we were going to be losing a lot of what I thought was a really good way to determine a national champion. And that as we were introducing more games, we were introducing more randomness, and that we would no longer have college football as a sport where the national champion really was the best team in the sport.
Right.
The NCAA tournament does not produce the best college basketball team from throughout the season. It gives you the best team who got the right bounces throughout the six games of the NCAA tournament. Right. I've also said on your program and elsewhere, expansion's good for me.
So, I mean, right, no. From a selfish standpoint, absolutely.
Yeah, at this point, you add more games, that's more live blogs, that's more instant reaction shows. Like, that is, and again, back to my wide net theory, if you cast a wider net and more fan bases are either A, in the running for the playoff at the start of November and in the closing weeks, and if more fan bases B, obviously are into the playoff, they're going to be consuming more of that playoff content, not just shutting off and shutting down their college football minds. I think that having college football be a sport that can be as wide-ranging as possible and get the most amount of interest from the largest swath of eyeballs, which of course, from the television perspective, is one of your key factors here. You need to have a championship that is big air quotes here, if you're watching on WRL Sports Plus, open to 131 teams, even if in practice from the time we've had at the college football playoff and the actions of the selection committee show it's not truly open to 131 teams. To save college football, to keep college football as wide-ranging as possible, casting the widest net for interest, then expansion of the college football playoff seems like that's the way to do it.
So how do you weigh that? Because I agree, even though I'm fundamentally opposed to expanding a college football playoff, and what Dabo Swinney said prior to last year's season at Operation Football in Charlotte was that, man, we're expanding the playoff. There ain't 12 teams that have a chance to win the college football playoff going into a college football playoff, but that's not what we're doing here, right? We're just giving you an opportunity to play a game, likely get your rear end beat, but you've at least played on that stage, much like we saw Cincinnati. I mean, they were sort of there. I mean, they did the best they could, but that was the best that they had to offer, and frankly, we all knew what was happening. We all knew that there was no chance for them to win once we saw the first quarter play. They just didn't have the ability to get it across the line. They kind of hung in there. So good.
And the same thing happened to Michigan State. The same thing happened to Washington.
No question.
The same thing happened to a Clemson team that did not have Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence. Kelly Bryant got out there for the Tigers in the college football playoff. And guess what? They weren't moving the ball either. And I was under the same assumption. The other thing that Dabo said prior to last year was I've seen this from being at college football playoff games and college football playoff national championship games. Teams are beat up.
Yep.
That's the 15th game of the season, and they are hurting.
They don't need to be playing that many games. I get it. And the argument is like, well, it's only a few teams. Well, there's already playing too many games. We're already asking too much of these guys there's only four teams that are going to be asked to play. That's a very weak argument for our own pleasure. But again, we're now looking at this from trying to save the sport from itself. I'm not even sure that's even possible. But are you pro or against Greg Sankey's idea that there will be no automatic qualifiers?
I am.
I think for the playoff,
I'm against it. I like automatic qualifiers.
See, if we want the best teams, I don't think we should have automatic qualifiers. But if we're trying to make it inclusive and open, then you have to.
I like automatic qualifiers for the interest that it generates around the conference championship games and the fact that we would go into that first Saturday in December, or whenever it is. We might have to adjust the calendar if we expand the playoff, but we would go into the conference championship games with real stakes and real potential for chaos. I think that if it's no automatic qualifiers, those teams that are, you know, in the top six of a 12 team or in the top eight of a 16 team, there would be much less drama then we would only be looking at a few bubble spots. And how about this? Conference championship games probably don't include the teams that are on the bubble. Conference championship right. games might include teams that are already set with their playoff future. So the automatic qualifier aspect, I think for what it would do in terms of, again, going back to the wide net, you can be at any university and you could have the optimism of Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. You can say, look,
good for Clark
we just
Lee.
Need to win our division. We just need to get to our championship game. And if we win our championship game, then we can be in the college football playoff competing for a national championship. I know we're scrapping divisions most right. places. The SEC might do it as well. But it's that same pitch where you start small. You say, all we need to do is get there. And if we get there, doesn't matter what the selection committee thinks of us. Doesn't matter what the selection mm-hmm. committee thinks of our strength of schedule. If we can win that, then we've got an end to go compete for a national championship. So I am in favor of automatic qualifiers. However, my understanding is that the automatic qualifiers is a big chip in the negotiations, and it is a chip that is likely to be dealt. And I don't know who ends up winning with that, but it's like people are in favor of it, people are not in favor of it, but nobody cares enough for that to be their non-negotiable breaking point. So that it is totally out of our hands, and it might come down to whether, like, the Big Ten might give up automatic qualifiers so that it can get multiple media rights mm-hmm. partners. And so the SEC would then get to get no automatic qualifiers, AKA the SEC Invitational, but maybe, yeah. then have to hand away some of the media rights away from ESPN and share with others.
All right. Now let's get to the other thing I wanted to get to before we have to let Chip Patterson go. We don't have very much time left. At @Chip_Patterson. So I want to get this straight here. PGA Tour player leaves the PGA Tour, joins a rival upstart golf tour that is designed to severely damage the PGA Tour. That player or those players criticize the PGA Tour for restrictive practices, hiding money from players, and ignoring member ideas. They cite playing less as motivation.
And then go to the Asian Tour to play more.
Right. Patrick Reed. And now are suing the PGA Tour for an injunction to allow them to play in the Tour Championship, in the FedEx Cup playoffs. I mean, really? What do you think?
I would think that Phil Mickelson, whose name is tied to this the closest, and I got Wall Street Journaled. I got, yeah. you know, I hit the paywall here. I'm sorry. And I haven't.
So did I, but we understand what's going
on. We understand what's happening. Thankfully, we know what's happening.
Yeah.
I would think that Phil Mickelson would be averse to things that involve the word, I don't know, discovery. You know, I'm no attorney, but I would think that the LIV Golf Tour and many of the powerful people who are supporting and involved with the LIV Golf Tour and might have other legal issues at hand, I would think that they wouldn't want to get involved in things like discovery. It's surprising, and I'm curious to see whether this does proceed, because as hastily as things have been thrown together, and again, like, I'm not besmirching the LIV Golf Tour. There is a very, like, real potential that they continue to adapt, they continue to adjust, they continue to attract talent.
And they will.
We look up 5 years from now and we truly live in a world where professional golf has two competing tours.
I think we will. I absolutely think we will.
But it has been thrown together hastily. And I wonder how buttoned up everything is and whether trying to pursue this this litigation would be problematic.
Well, I think it says, and this is where Jay Monahan was right weeks ago. Like, why do they need us? Like, you went and did your thing. Why do they need us? So they need the PGA Tour for official World Golf Rankings points. They need the PGA Tour for this amount of, maybe Taylor Gooch didn't get a whole boatload of money to go play on the LIV series, right? I mean, I really don't know. Maybe Hudson Swafford didn't get a whole bunch of money to go play on the LIV series. He was just going there for, they cut him a nice check and, you know, he got some guaranteed money and there's no cut and blah, 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 blah. But maybe these guys need the PGA Tour more than they let on. at the beginning, which maybe they should just throw themselves on the mercy of the tour. But what do you think about this? Because I don't know how it's going to rule. I know there was an injunction to allow those guys play in the Irish Open on the DP World Tour, which was co-sanctioned, but wasn't actually that wasn't co-sanctioned, but
because Scottish Open.
The Scottish Open was, but they were allowed to play in that event because the DP World Tour had not banned anybody. They were allowed to play in the Scottish Open because the DP World Tour had not banned players. They just fined players. But because that was co-sanctioned, they tried to ban them. That didn't work. But the what's going to happen here is that these players are – but do you think that they will, as Davis Love said, do you think the players might walk out? Could you imagine 146 PGA Tour players saying, you know what? If they're playing, we're not. Do you see that possibility?
No, because there are a lot of not all the bridges have been burned. There are PGA Tour stars, PGA Tour golfers. There are like President's Cup, you know, there are President's Cup participants. There are people who are still tied to the PGA Tour and all the affiliations that are not going to be going to LIV Golf who have some of their closest friends who have made the jump to LIV Golf. And there's been support. You know, it hasn't all been Rory McIlroy. You know, it hasn't all been your boy, Billy Horschel.
Gosh, it was so much fun for me yesterday to talk to Billy.
You know, it hasn't all been flamethrowers from those who have stayed loyal to the PGA Tour. There's been a lot of, like, you know, they made their decision and
right.
I'm still friends with them. I still support them and wish them all the best of luck. And so because there's just not total animosity across the board, I don't see a full 140 golfer walkout if that is the case. That would be incredibly surprising to me because, again, the bridges between competitors on the LIV or people who have been announced to go to join LIV Golf, they still have some good relationships with people that are going to be a part of the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Max Homa will not be mad if Taylor Gooch comes back to play the FedEx Cup. Those guys are tight. Chip Patterson, not as tight as you and I. But I appreciate your time always, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
Chip Patterson is the best. All right. We actually put six up on the board. That's all right. It happens.
I know a lot of things I got to get to today in Halftime Entertainment.
All right, we got time.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely plenty of time.
We're going to place bets in a little bit.
We haven't talked about it yet. It hasn't been mentioned, I don't believe, but Campbell is leaving the Big South and is heading to the Colonial Athletic Association.
Really?
Yeah, yep.
See, you know,
starting in 2023.
We talk about this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever we talk about conference expansion, we almost always talk about the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, North Carolina A&T skipped out on the MEAC to join the Big South.
Mm-hmm.
How much money could that have been?
I don't know.
How much of a bump was that?
Mm-hmm.
It was like cost of living increase.
Let's see. Hampton, Monmouth, and Stony Brook all joined the CAA in the last year. So
what, Hampton?
Hampton, yep.
So Hampton went from the MEAC to the Big South. To the Colonial.
Yeah.
I mean, Hampton is an HBCU.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, by the way,
Stony Brook.
I believe that A&T might be actually leaving the Big South.
Are they?
I think they're actually going to the CAA as well.
Look at that.
Potentially.
Hey, by the way, you know the Duke's Mayo Classic is... Central and A&T.
Yeah.
The Aggie Eagle Classic in Charlotte.
Nice.
Gosh, that's
gonna
awesome.
Be fun.
Absolutely. I'm jealous.
But yeah, actually, it was announced back in February that A&T approved the recommendation by the university to join the CAA. So the CAA is also going to have A&T as well. It also already features UNC Wilmington. Upwardly, is also in the CAA.
Yes. They've been in the CAA for a long, long time.
So, yeah, now you have three North Carolina-based schools going to the CAA. So
there
you
go. Time where they ran the CAA.
Yeah. Realignment, folks.
Yep.
All right, a couple of movie and television news here.
Okay.
Disney Plus usually uses Wednesdays as their day to release new episodes of Marvel and Star Wars shows. Uh-huh. But they announced today that for She-Hulk, which was set to premiere on August 17th, Wednesday.
What?
She-Hulk.
Okay.
Yep. That show is actually going to premiere on Thursday the 18th, and the show, episodes are going to come out on Thursdays. So set your DVRs, folks.
She-Hulk?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's an attorney.
I'm sure she is.
She is.
She-attorney.
So this was something that came out yesterday from about Warner Brothers Discovery. So there was a film adaptation of the DC comic character Batgirl, which had already wrapped up production. So the studio, the film was going to feature Leslie Grace as Barbara Gordon, aka Batgirl, and they had already wrapped up principal photography. They were already in post production, and it was set to premiere on HBO Max. It was supposed to be an HBO Max exclusive. Well, Warner Brothers Discovery decided, said, you know what? Not going to put it out there. Just scrapped it.
Okay.
And the reason for it, not because the film was bad, apparently. Apparently the film, everything was fine. But one of the reasons why they're not going to do it is because they want to reshift their focus back on theater blockbusters as opposed to stuff that will go straight to HBO Max.
Okay.
And they can use this because they won't make any money off of it. They can use it as a tax write-off now. $90 million spent on this movie.
Really?
$90 million spent on this movie. Already wrapped up principal photography. You're already in post-production. And you said, nah.
That seems like a lot.
It's like, why? It blows my mind. And this is one for people who enjoy superhero movies and want to see these properties released, or just want to see these properties on a on big screen or on a streaming service. This is what frustrates people about DC Warner Brothers and their whole film line, because they have zero direction and they do things like this. And apparently as well, they had already started, this is according to Variety, they had already started a follow-up to the animated movie Scoob, which came out in 2020. They're doing Scoob Holiday Hunt. Apparently that's on the chopping block. Even though they gave us a sizzle reel back in December, that already spent $40 million. Just decided, you know what? Not going to do it.
Hmm.
It just, why? Why? Why spend all the time and money to do that stuff if you're just going to say no? Like, you're gone that far, do it. But hey, you know what? It's not my money. If you want to burn $90 million, go for it. I, you know, honestly, I feel bad for the people that were actors, actresses, the production people. Mm-hmm. I feel really bad for those people who put a lot of time and effort into making a film and not to see it come to fruition. That's got to be frustrating on their part. Do you still get an acting credit even though the film wasn't released?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Kevin Costner gets an acting credit for The Big Chill.
Yeah.
He was not in The Big Chill.
Interesting.
Now, he might have been the dead body.
Oh, okay.
In the very in the opening scene, because they were at a funeral, right?
Okay.
He might have been a dead body, but Kevin Costner was actually in The Big Chill.
Okay, well, good for him.
I think it was Kevin. Don't at me if you go to IMDb and it's not there.
Do it.
Okay, at me,
Adam. All right, last thing here. Tom Brady, as we mentioned earlier, turns 45 years old today. So USA Today's For the Win, their FTW website, put out a list of 45 things that are very old, yet still younger than Tom Brady. So I'm just going to roll through this list. Going to roll through it.
Very nice.
Number one, Pac-Man. Number two, mobile phones. Number three, the Sony Walkman.
Wait, this is younger than Tom Brady?
Younger than Tom Brady.
The Sony Walkman.
Sony Walkman came out after Tom Brady was born.
45 years old. I'm trying to do the math here. 77?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Sony Walkman. The internet, obviously.
Yes.
ESPN is younger
by
than
two
Tom
years.
Brady.
By 2 years.
By a couple
years.
MTV.
Whoa.
Yeah. Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Yeah.
Diane Keaton's Oscar for Best Actress in Annie Hall.
What a great movie that was.
Chicken McNuggets.
That's
are younger than
phenomenal.
Tom Brady. The movie Grease.
Uh-huh.
Reese's Pieces. The first primetime Super Bowl.
Really?
Yeah, the first primetime Super Bowl. Younger than Tom Brady.
How about that?
The Muppets movie. Younger than Tom Brady. Garfield Comics. Younger than Tom Brady. My Little Pony. Cool Ranch Doritos.
Gosh. That's a Christian McCaffrey favorite right there,
there
Cool Ranch Doritos.
Vanna White's debut on Wheel of Fortune. Younger
Very
than Tom Brady.
Nice.
Transformers. Optimus Prime is younger than Tom Brady.
Wow.
Tom Hanks's entire career. Younger than Tom Brady.
Didn't it start with Bosom Buddies?
Yeah.
Right? Started with Bosom Buddies?
Yep.
Do you remember his co-star in that?
No, I don't.
Peter Scolari.
There you go. Okay. Sorry, number 20 on this list. Both Top Gun movies. Air Jordan.
Yeah,
Fruit
well,
Punch,
by a lot.
Yeah, Fruit Punch Gatorade.
Ick.
The Dodge Ram. Dodge Ram trucks are younger than Tom Brady.
Wow.
The USA Today is younger than Tom Brady.
Yes, absolutely.
Diet Coke, the Brat Pack, Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake.
Of course.
Microwave popcorn.
Yeah, okay.
Home Depot.
Ah.
Also, here's a funny one. Number 30 on the list. The rise and fall of Blockbuster Video. That one kind of.
This is fantastic.
Macintosh Computers.
Uh-huh.
The Empire Strikes Back. CNN. The whole network CNN.
Okay.
AC/DC's Back in Black. The Reagan Administration. The Susan B. Anthony Dollar. Younger than Tom Brady.
Okay.
Legalized Home Brewing. Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Oh, man.
The Invention of Ciabatta Bread.
The invention of a style of bread?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Also, the game Tetris.
Can I just say that ciabatta bread is overrated?
That's fair.
It's too much.
Okay.
It's just too much.
All right. All right, roll through the last one here. The video game Tetris, which came out in the 80s. Minivans.
I love minivans.
Yeah. The We Are the World, USA for Africa song. The TV show Cheers.
Okay.
The wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana. And their final one, number 45, was the entire FTW staff. So the entire For the Win staff, younger than Tom Brady.
Shouts to Caroline Darney, our friend.
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent work.
Place your bets. Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Yeah. Okay, you can own me. I owe you nothing.
I should have known the Mets were going to baby Jacob DeGrom. He only pitched 5 innings in spite of the fact he only threw like 60-some-odd pitches. And he didn't strike out 8, so I needed that to happen. Plus, the Mets needed to win. They didn't do that. I knew they wouldn't score for Jacob DeGrom because they never do. So I won my under 6.5 runs. Nationals win at 5-1. So I only lost 30.
Okay.
All right, Dennis Cox, start us off.
I was plus 70 yesterday.
Where are you? Look at you.
Yeah, I had the draw on my soccer bet yesterday.
Very nice.
But I missed my other two. Whatever. But hey, plus is plus. Shohei Ohtani, homer, plus 380. Even though he is pitching today. Plus 380 on a home run.
Shohei plus 380. Very nice. All right, we're going to start off basic. It all gets underway on Friday. Right? We've got Arsenal and Crystal Palace Friday.
You're not walking alone?
Oh. I am not. No. Well, this is where we're going to start. So the Premier League starts Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, Liverpool's at Craven Cottage against Fulham to open up their campaign. Straight up, Liverpool to win it all. Top the table in the Premier League, plus 225. Give me the Reds.
Okay. Not walking alone. I'm going to go to the pitch as well. In about 5 minutes, we have a start between Dynamo Kiev and Sturm Graz.
Oh, yeah.
Because why not?
Sure.
Champions qualifying.
Sure.
Draw, plus 235.
Stay with the draw. Keep staying with the draw. All right. One of my favorite things is winner without. So we kick out the top six. We kick out the top six. West Ham, the best club not in the traditional top six of the English Premier League, that Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham, Man U, Man City, and Liverpool. So West Ham to be the best of the rest at plus 400.
So basically this is to finish second?
No, finish essentially seventh if the top six finishes one through six.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Okay. But they could finish third if as long as they're the best, not in that top six.
All right. I'll take your word for it. All right, I'm going to go ahead and jump ahead for you because I want to give you one lacrosse bet.
Sure.
I'm going to jump ahead to Friday. Cannons play Redwoods. Give me the Cannons on the money line plus 120.
Oh, man, I was going to do that, so now I can't.
We'll take the Redwoods.
No, that's fine.
Our guy, Nakai Montgomery, plays for him.
Oh, go Makai. All right. Winner without the top two. The top two, of course, Liverpool and City. City will finish second. Give me Arsenal at plus 500 to be the next best club. And I'm going to throw in a bonus one. Heung-min Son to have the most goals in Premier League games this year at plus 1,600.
Okay.
We're going to go with the with Sun.
Some really long futures bets.
All of it. They're all futures bets. It's all about the end of the season.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Finding the perfect suit can seem impossible, but finding one that's perfect for you is easy with Indochino. Choose your design and custom details. Then submit your measurements online or get measured in-store for a custom made-for-you fit at an incredible price. And shop their new fall collection for seasonal styles. Find your perfect suit with Indochino. Get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more with promo code FALLUPDATE at Indochino.com. That's Indochino.com, promo code FALLUPDATE.